Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 192. It's Comic Book Club Day. Go to youtube.com/Nerdist to watch Comic Book Club live. Well, it's not live, but it's a live show that they taped. So it was live at one point. I guess ultimately everything was live at one point. So maybe that's not the best way to rate time. Nerdist Podcast has a couple of live shows coming up ourselves where you can experience them live or not if you're in a temporal rift. Come to the Vic Theater in Chicago, Friday the 13th. Also on Saturday, we're going to be in Iowa City, Iowa. Then the following week, we're going to be at the Royal Oak Music Hall in Royal Oak, Michigan. Lots of fun shows coming up, but we did have to cancel our show at State College in Pennsylvania. I'm so sorry. It was our goof. It was bad routing on our part. I blame the airlines too, but basically we were supposed to be at the Royal Oak Music Theater on Friday the 20th, then State College on Saturday the 21st, and then I'm supposed to go shoot something in New Mexico on the 22nd, and no airlines fly direct to all those places, and so it was just, unfortunately, we just can't get to everywhere we need to go in one weekend, so we do have to sadly reschedule State College Pennsylvania show. I'm sorry, Pennsylvania. We'll come back to you soon. The thing we're shooting in Albuquerque is pretty amazing, so maybe that'll make up for it when we are able to announce that. But apologies aside, I would like to say this episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you go to this episode's page on Nerdist.com and then click on the Amazon banner, you just shop as you normally would, and then everything you buy ultimately supports the Nerdist podcast to keep this ghost ship afloat. Well, I guess ghost ships float anyway. That's really part of what a ghost ship is. Otherwise, it's just a sunken ship, right? Unless it's a spacecraft, and then it's just like a dead ship floating into space. Jim Gaffigan's back on the podcast. He has a brand new comedy special. It's out today. It's called Mr. Universe. It is available at jimgaffigan.com for $5. You can download it. Go straight to the artist. Huh? I fully support this type of transaction. So, yes, Jim Gaffigan's doing the digital download model for his new special, and I cannot encourage you enough to support it. Mr. Universe is an amazing comedy special. Jim is in top form. And I don't know if you saw any of the sneak peeks floating around online about his the whales bit, but his chunk on whales is amazing. You can see it on YouTube. But it's $5. That is less than going to see a comedy show live. $5 for an amazing hour of comedy, and that money will go directly to Jim. So jimgaffigan.com. Download it for $5 right now. And here he is. We actually recorded this one at Nerdmelt. We don't record all of our Nerdist podcasts at Nerdmelt, but this one we did, engineered by Katie. Thanks, Katie. How you doing, Katie?
Good.
You got any big plans for today, Katie?
No.
Okay. I'm going to stop talking. So you don't have to edit all this out. Just leave it in. Fuck it. These people are nice. All right, Nerdist Podcast episode number 192 with jimgaffigan.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Okay.
right. Oh, there I am. Oh, there I am.
By the way, thank you, you guys,
there we go.
For doing this. I really do, of course.
And listen, anytime.
That's what I am. I'm four.
You know you're welcome to come on the show anytime you want.
And I'll follow you on Twitter, too. If you... Isn't it amazing how important that is? You're like, yeah, so-and-so doesn't follow me.
Or if they unfollow, you're like, what did I do?
Yeah. Well, also among comedian peers, it's like you don't even have to know the person.
Right.
But it's like, he's a comedian. You should follow him. That's the right thing to do. Do you know what I mean? It's like he or she might have the type of comedy that is antithetical to anything that you would hold dear. But you should follow them because it's professional courtesy.
That's right. Yeah. It's sort of like how you apologize to someone if you didn't stick around for their set. I'm sorry, I can't watch your set. You're like, I don't care if people stick around for my set.
I don't care at all.
I use the excuse of I'm trying to keep it under 350.
That's what you're trying to do. when people say shit to you on Twitter or whatever, you should just let it go. And I always go, yeah, but comedians, actors, definitely, comedians in particular, literally the most sensitive bunch,
right?
As a career, probably the most, because you're hypersensitive to the world, because that's, you absorb stuff and then you translate it and you write jokes. So we are naturally sensitive and you know, insecure. So that stuff just pokes at our nerves.
Yeah. No, I think it's Twitter is very fascinating too, because I write a lot with my wife. We write everything together, and so she'll do tweets, not nearly as often. And someone will respond, and I literally have to hold her back from responding. And I'm like, you can't respond. It's like, just imagine that this is like a YouTube comment. Not to criticize YouTube comments, but they're more crazy, right?
You can criticize YouTube comments.
Yeah. I'm like, I got this special that I'm trying to sell, so I'm like, I don't want to lose the YouTube comment people. No, but I literally had to hold her back from replying because we all have that feeling. But what we intellectually forget is that most of the time these people are just trying to get a response. They're trying to get attention. Mm-hmm. So if you go to their feed, they've said, I want your dick to everyone.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's kind of a compliment,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, that's kind of a compliment.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't feel like I was being bagged.
That's
almost
the
like
worst insult
dick.
I've ever received. Someone wanting my
Jim, I'd
that's
really how... like to fillet you.
They didn't oh, my even God. Say... Would you stop ripping on
no,
him?
No, I mean, I'm just saying.
They didn't even say dick. They said penis. And they did it in brackets, and then they apologized. That was the most rude anyone's ever been
Fuck
to
you,
me.
Man. I want your dick.
Hashtag, what? I'm sorry.
So, you were on one of our first Nerdist podcasts.
I was.
Like the first handful of
in New York.
A couple years ago.
I was
in
also on one that never aired.
Oh my God, that was so heartbreaking.
That was a fun one.
I can send you the file, but it'll drive you nuts. Yeah, you did that show in New York.
No, it's not even that. It's just a tick.
It's somewhat like a click track that whoever was recording, the venue was recording, and something, it was like a metronome.
Yeah.
And it just... You know, oh man, that fucking bummed me out.
I think it was an ungrounded cable. That's what I think it was.
Oh, is that what it was?
That's what I decided.
That's what I would think.
Yeah, right, Jim? Come on.
I want your dick, ungrounded cable. That doesn't make sense. But it's nice to have you back on. For people listening, this is your second time on in reality.
This is fun. And I was saying this when we were walking up the stairs. It's like getting comedians to talk to each other. It's kind of like us doing a set. Like when we do a set, they're like, can you do a set for my kid's school? It's a benefit. You're like, well, I was going to do comedy anyway. And they're like, here, let me give you a gift basket. You're like, no, I was going to do a show anyway.
No, you don't understand. I need to do this so I can sleep at night.
So doing a podcast, I don't know if you guys identify with this. I mean, some of it is I have four kids, but I get to have conversations with comedians or people I like when I do podcasts. That I never get to talk to. I mean, I live in New York and you live in LA.
Yeah, they're never not. They're always fun. Like, you always walk away from them. And you're like,
I always thought
good.
when I was first starting the podcast, I just thought, you know, sitting backstage at like UCB or whatever, where there's more than one or two comedians,
right?
There's just a lot of fucking around,
right?
And
right.
That's fun, and that's kind of what we should be doing.
Yes, that I think it's very fun, and it's also, you know, living in New York. It's, you know, there's like, I used to come out to L.A. more often. So when you don't come out to L.A., there's like, oh, like I wasn't even out here for the beginning of Meltdown. Like Alex was like, you're going to do Meltdown tonight. And I'm like,
really, what's Meltdown? It was like, I was the equivalent of like someone's grandparent saying, what's this email thing? You know? Because you get
electronic mail, explain it to
what
me.
What is this?
Let me just say that.
Where do I put the stamp?
I would like someone to remove my mother's forward button on her email.
Oh, why? What is she forwarding you?
The weirdest things that, like, you know, Obama's not born in the United States, things like this. I'm still getting that.
That's really depressing,
and I'm
isn't
like,
it?
What is happening? And then there was like this thing that I just got that was forwarded. I read the chain down, and it came from somebody, and then went to my aunt, and then went to my mother, and then my mother forwarded it out to a bunch of people, including like my siblings, and it was take a look at this, and it was a picture of Reagan doing some sort of speech with the American flag behind him. In the press room at the Oval Office, and then George Bush, George W., Bill Clinton, all of them had the flag behind them because they're in the press room. And then it was Obama, not in the press room at all. He was in one of the hallway rooms at the White House that doesn't have an American flag.
And that's what they were.
And they were like, every president had the American flag behind them in the Oval Office. Look at what happened.
That enrages me so much. I can't even yell about it.
You know, it's so frustrating because there's this generational divide, right? That is, but what I don't understand, we're talking about your mother, who you love and who's an intelligent
person. Who was
person,
a very...
Oh, I mean, I'm mad that there was no flag in the back. That goddamn communist!
No, but, my aunt, who is a great lady, who when I was a little kid, lived with two gay men and was like living like the Mary Tyler Moore lifestyle, working as a producer in DC, it's like now she's like a total right winger. Yeah. That like, and there's, you know, it's just my big gripe is that there's this absence of dialogue. But then again, I don't even, when people bring up that like Obama, you know, was in the, you know, they warned us in the Bible that Obama's gonna end the world. I don't know if I want to have a conversation with them.
Because what else? Anything else they say is sort of like,
what? What happens to some of these people?
And
is there a switch? You know, it's like, you know what? I'm gonna wear this. I'm gonna start wearing dark socks with sandals.
I think it's chemical.
Really?
It's this. Yeah. Here, because, well, first of all, there's a couple things that are happening. When you get older, I think a human being's lifelong quest is for significance, right?
Yeah.
So whether it be, like you said, people commenting on to try to get a reaction on Twitter or YouTube or whatever, they're seeking significance by trying to get your attention. And so as you get older, it's probably harder and harder to feel significant. And so you, like, that is older people going, oh my God, I've discovered this thing, and they want to pass it around and share it. So that, I think, is an emotional mechanism. I think the chemical mechanism is sort of like, you know, my dad's 70, and in the last maybe 10 years, he's gotten gushier. Like, my dad was never a gushy kind of a dad.
Right, right.
He was cool, but never like, oh, I just want to see you and give you hugs and stuff.
Right, right, right.
And so, but as men get older, their estrogen levels go up.
Right,
and
right,
so they get, like, so my dad is much more like, oh, family and love, and let's all, I just want to see you, you know. Not that he didn't want to before, but now he makes a point to really be gushy about it, which is sweet. But I also think that, you know, chemical changes make us make different choices as we get older, and maybe this is related to that.
I also think that some of it is environmental, too. It's like these people, you know, Matt, you know, your mom included, especially your mom.
Yeah.
No, but I think that some of it is, I mean, you tour around and you see this, it's where people are, you know. It's like if you're raised in, you know, I was raised in a small town. It was decidedly Christian. It was, you know, it was relatively, you know, so it's like I was very anti-Christian when I was like a teenager. I was like, these nut jobs. Mm-hmm. And now I'm much more forgiving of that. And so I guess the point is if someone grows up in, or lives in an environment where everybody's a Republican and the norm is to be Republican, and if they're part of a bowling league and everyone's a right winger, it's like eventually you're going to become a little bit more like them.
Yeah. Sure.
They moved to Florida.
And if you watch Fox News enough, you probably will start believing that. I mean, I really think that Fox News proves that objectivity in delivering news is impossible.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm running for senator. I mean, is that the last thing?
You're here.
No, but I agree. If you, I mean, one of the frustrating things about our about the way news is delivered or just the way we get information is that there's always it's always point of view driven.
Yeah.
It's never well, these are just the facts. There's always some point of view to because a story needs some kind of point of view for people to latch onto, so they'll watch a show, so it'll get ratings, so they'll buy it. You know, like it's too hard for people to sort through. Like, people just want to be told how to feel about things. It's just easier that way. They just want to be told how to tell me how to feel about this thing. Fine. And so, you know, like with Fox News, for instance, or any news source, they're going to cut it in such a way that kind of gets their agenda across because they know they're talking to their audience.
Yeah. No, I totally think that. I don't know. It's just a confusing mess. But I feel like I watch all the different news stuff and I love it, but it reaches a point where I'm like, ugh, you know. It's just, I mean, I love Rachel, but it's like when the newscasters have the feuds among the channels. I'm just like, really? It's like, you know, I don't even you know, people always assume that comedians hate each other, but it's like comedians would never indulge in the drama of having a feud. You know, to the consistency that we see on cable news.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is we got to kill all the cable news people. No, but you know what I'm saying? It's just whenever you watch, I don't know, maybe you guys don't watch cable news, and they're like, and on the other channel, that guy's a jerk. And you're like sitting there going, can you just give me the news?
Right, right.
I'd like some information.
Well, it's sort of the interesting idea. I like to think that if I ever ran for office, and I'm never going to run for office, but if I were ever to run for office, you know, when I see all the crazy mudslinging, I always just kind of go, why are you wasting energy talking about how much someone else sucks? Why aren't you talking more about what you're going to do that's good? Like, why get caught up in it? And I guess, I don't know.
Because it's the perception business, which is exactly what the same business we're in.
Oh, totally.
It's a strange...
Don't you feel like comedy, though, is more of an ad business? I feel comedy is more like advertising than anything else.
I don't know. I mean, I think that, like, stand-up comedy is a lot of perception. I think that, you know, I don't, you know, like, I've had some success, and I can't really identify what did it. You know, like, people will sit there and they'll go, oh, Dane just, you know, did this marketing push. No, he had a very strong appeal for, you know, 14-year-olds to whatever, 20-year-olds.
So 14 and a half.
You know what I mean? It's like, and then I start talking in advertising terms among a key demographic that would buy in.
Jim, where'd you get all these charts? Well, I brought these fish. Like,
but I don't know. I think that there's something, there's a meritocracy in stand-up, too. So I don't think that people just get hoodwinked. I think there is pressure to watch and enjoy something among your kind of mini culture. So,
yeah.
You know, Louis is the comic of the day, right? And I think that he, you know, we know that he's brilliant, but I think that every comic that becomes huge, whether it's Seinfeld or whether it's the TV show Seinfeld, I think there's 10% of the people of the 100% that love that comedian or that show that are just on for the road. They're on for the ride.
Right.
They're like, you know, I don't really get it. But
I'm sure
in my show, there's 10% of the people that are like, this. You know what? Well, you know, my wife or girlfriend.
Yeah, there are definitely people. There are definitely people, and you know, I can say this. You guys don't have to say this, but you know, I love Louis, and he's definitely one of my favorite comedians. You know, but he's definitely one of those people of the moment right now that no one will say anything bad about because they don't want to look uncool.
Right.
But I don't. But I'm not saying that they should say anything bad about him. But I'm just saying, no one, you know, like it's not Louis specific. It's just sort of, you know, there are sort of people that pop in culture as being like it's interesting for him to be like super fucking cool guy of the moment because I'm sure he's never felt that way.
Well, it's also interesting because you said like advertising marketing and like Louis almost did the anti-advertising, right? He's not someone who really kind of plays by – he doesn't kiss any rings really, you know, and his TV show, the HBO show, was considered unsuccessful. But I think there's also a consistency there of quality that just unrelented. And once NPR kind of anointed him, I think the waves just started crashing.
Well,
again, as we've said, it's like – it's not as if the comedians – didn't know he was brilliant for like 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, Louis in particular, I mean, I think probably
besides being, you know, an amazing comedian, I think the thing I respect the most about him is just that he does what he wants to do, and that he makes that work. Like, his show is just the show that he wanted to do, and his stand-up is the stand-up he wants to do, and releasing his last special was what he wanted to do.
Right.
And he just, you know, I always have a great respect for people who just kind of go like, yeah, I don't need the system, fuck it, I'm just going to do my own thing. And right. I think that's where I have the most respect for him, besides being one of my favorite comics. But I think that's where he really... That's his real talent as well.
Right, right.
But as far as comics being advertisers, I just mean, you know, if I'm watching Mad Men or whatever, like even Bewitched, and they're like, here, we've come up with this. It's like, as a comic, you're selling a concept to someone that they didn't know they needed to know, and you're figuring out how to package it for them. Like, that's what I mean by stand-up is like advertising.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, because there's also something... To the aspect that I think that people like to discover comedians. They like to have a percentage of ownership. I think Nerdist is that way too. I think that nerds are like, there's this self-identification. You know what? I am a nerd. These guys are talking about, they're talking about me. You know, it might not be across the line. They might be Doctor Who. It shows you how little I know.
Doctor Hugh,
right?
He's
that
great.
House guy, right?
Hugh Laurie.
No, Doctor Who. But you know, the nerd kind of span is pretty enormous. So if people get three, it's like Comic Con. It's like not everyone that goes to Comic Con is across the board, you know, with every Comic Con event. But I think that with comics, there is a self-identification similar to music. But there's something of this moment where, you know, this is a good time for comedians.
It's an amazing time. I mean, I don't want to doom it, but maybe not since the 80s, you know, was there a time where comics could have their voice in the world as much as we do now,
right.
But just not through traditional media means. I mean, there's still very little stand-up on television.
Yeah. There is. It's amazing, you know, doing theaters. That didn't exist when we started.
Right.
I mean, it may be for Cosby, you know, but like, I don't think even Seinfeld, I mean, he didn't do stand-up when he was doing that show, but, you know, the blue-collar guys and Dane really opened that door. And now there's a lot of comedians. You're doing theaters.
We're doing theaters, yeah. And, you know, and also on the more alternative side, Dave Cross and Patton, like, started doing rock clubs where they figured out, like, oh, we can keep ticket prices lower if we go do rock clubs, you know, and get out of... It was all... But at the core of it, it was all just to get out of the fucking comedy club business, which
Right. Well, it's also finding... I mean, I think... Comedians, you're funnier in front of people that get you.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing better than performing in front of a room where you have new material and you see some familiar faces. They're on your side. You're going to be funnier. It's great. And so it makes sense for, you know, David Cross, for everyone, you know.
Is this special that's coming out, is it your fourth or your third?
It's my third hour, but your my third fourth, hour. You know... I did a half hour before.
So how do you get ready for? I mean, how do you amass new material, and where do you try it out?
I do a lot of I do clubs and alternative or underground or whatever they're called now. You know, it's
meltdowns.
It's there's different terms. It's kind of like. We don't want to, you know, like the African American community didn't want to be called black anymore. It's like the alternative rooms where you don't want to be called underground. We don't want to be called alternative. It's
right.
Like whatever we're supposed to be called now, you know.
Is it weird if we just try to cross them and call the underground rooms black rooms, or does that
make
sense?
We should call them black rooms.
Yeah. So you're doing a lot of black rooms.
So I'm doing a lot of black rooms, and no, it's a mix of straight comedy clubs doing sets there and. Alternative rooms.
Yeah.
I feel like the alternative rooms are really important for, you know, that's where like some, it's like true serum, right?
Right.
Because in a comedy club, they can be like, hey, it's the Hot Pocket guy, ha ha ha.
Right.
But in an alternative room, you know, they'll be like, wait a minute, are you really talking about this? If you're going to talk about hotels, you better make it really original, you know?
Well, yeah, and also, but I feel, you know, I I've kind of developed this weird, and I don't know, I wouldn't be able to write it down on paper, but there is a weird algorithm that I know how well a bit does in certain rooms, how it's going to do. Like, I have this weird sort of relationship. Oh,
that's so up my alley.
Yeah, it's like, I know if I do a joke at the open mic here at Meltdown, and if it gets an okay response, there might be something there. And if I can take it to the alternative room, then I can play with it a little bit. But then how do I expand that and make it a little more broad for people who don't go to those rooms? Like, right. there is an interesting, and it only exists because I know all of those rooms' relationship to each other.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's what you might have to rewrite and clarify. I mean, there's stuff that I've thrown out that's, you know, it just becomes too esoteric. Because some of, you know, I do my shows, my theater shows, and there are people that are like, if I'm not talking about food, they're a little bit like, what's he doing? What's going on? And so there is, like, if I get too esoteric, I mean, it has to be mixed in with some stuff. But I also feel like that to me means that I have to rewrite and clarify, right?
Do you feel like in any sense that you're a little bit of a slave to success in that sense? That you, like, well, people have a certain expectation when they come out, and I have, you know, I can't just do whatever the fuck I want to do.
Well, that's kind of the, I would say no, because some of it is, I don't think there's any sweeter situation than a beautiful theater in, you know, whether it's Kansas City or, you know, Tupelo, Missouri, or Mississippi, where people have paid like $30 to go to a beautiful theater that they have pride in, and they're usually on a date or they're, you know, with a couple friends. It's like environment, and then they know you and they like you. You're going to get some allowances. You sure. can go, you know, you can kind of extend the perception. I'm just saying overall there's a little bit of, you know, like, it's just strange doing a show, because sometimes people, you know, you'll feel certain people in the audience, like, they just want to hear old stuff.
Right.
But, you know, if you stuck to the old stuff, then
you can't.
You know, it's just insane.
When you release a special, what's the percentage of new stuff that you do the next time you're out on the road?
Well, this time, you know, this special is coming out on April 11th, and I'm going to San Francisco, like, I should know, but like in 2 weeks. But I didn't put everything in the special. I mean, sure. The special is like 75 minutes, but there's like 20 minutes that I didn't put in that I developed. Mm-hmm. Or I should say that my wife and I developed Jeannie. And so there's a healthy chunk, but it might be half and half, which is a little bit, you know, I'll probably get some emails. Because if you have like one old joke to a hypercritical person, they're going to be like, it was all old stuff. And it was like, it was just one chunk.
I know.
So
people love to do that. Yeah.
They loved it. It was all old. And you're like, no, it wasn't. It was like 89% new. But they're like, because also if it's a similar topic, they're like, well, it had to do with exercise. He's already done that. You're like, no, but
it's funny. That really is like walking into a cafeteria and then just staring at the beans and being like, this place only has beans.
Right,
like,
right.
No, but you just need to turn your head a little bit and you can see that there are a lot of other foods readily available.
Yeah.
They love to do that. But theaters, I think the thing that I like about theaters just from a psychological standpoint is that I think there's more of an emotional investment for people, even though I contend that comedy clubs are more expensive than going to see someone in a theater.
They are.
Oh, yeah.
Because they totally are.
You have to, you're paying a cover and a drink minimum, and the drinks are expensive, and you're probably going to get food.
You got a tip, unless you're an asshole.
Yeah, and you tip too. So for two people to go to see you at a comedy club could be easily $100. Two people to go see you at a theater could be like 60.
And an empty stomach.
Or, you know, 75 after the fucking, ticketing fees. But it's still cheaper. However, I think people look at comedy clubs as more disposable experiences than a theater where you go, I have received a hard ticket in the mail that says, you know, so-and-so presents Jim Gaffigan at this theater, and it feels like a more of a thing.
Yeah, and I think it's the environment of a theater. I mean, some of these beautiful theaters, I mean, even the Wiltern, you know, it's people drive by that like all the time, and they're like, "All right, I'm going to go and see him here," as opposed to in a comedy club. Even though a comedy club's a much looser experience, and you can, I don't know. I feel like when I do theaters, I have to. It has to be pretty much A's across the board because you want people to leave going, "All right, I'll come. I want to come back."
It was when worth he the comes investment.
Back. Yes,
they want you want to make sure it's worth the.
But
investment.
It is interesting because comedy clubs end up being pretty expensive. I mean, now super we're going to get in trouble by, you know, it's like our friends that run comedy clubs are like, what are you guys doing? We're already struggling.
I know the comedy club business is struggling, but I think the comedy business, I mean, listen, if anything, the comedy club business might be struggling the way a lot of other industries are struggling. And so the idea is like, well, fucking adapt and learn how to do it better. And maybe it's good that you're struggling now so you can figure out a better system. And, you know, it's a survival of the fittest. The ones that don't figure it out won't. But you know well, you know very well what it's like to go into a comedy club and you just kind of, they just sort of treat you like, you're just here to distract people so they'll buy chicken wings.
Exactly.
And, you know, I get that, you know, I don't think that my comedy is the most important thing in the world, but I do have a little bit of pride in what I do, and I don't want to feel like I'm just jumping around so people will get fucking drunk.
Exactly. Yeah, and there's also, I mean, you know, you do a sound check when you do a sound check and a light, you adjust the lights and everything. It's like you set the mood. Whereas in a comedy club, you usually show up and, you know, they could have given away 40 tickets to people that just came from a funeral, or they don't, or English is a third language. You know, it's like I did a show in Detroit where literally there was like, I would say there was at least 50 people that did not speak English at all. They were just kind of, I don't know what they were doing there. They were just kind of hanging out, having a birthday party, opening presents. You know, it's, and it was a good comedy club, but just that night, someone had gotten 50 tickets, and it ended up that, you know, it's one thing that they weren't interested in me, but they weren't interested. They needed a large room to hold 50 people.
Right. And so they figured, let's go to a place where no one else speaks our language.
Yes.
And then there'll be something going on.
There'll
in the
be
background.
Something going on. It's,
they could have just gone to Chuck E. Cheese and gotten the same experience.
No, you can't go to Chuck E. Cheese unless you have a kid.
That's true.
Do you know that now? You can't. You can't
know,
go.
I should know.
Yeah,
that.
Really. I told you.
We
that.
Were. Yeah,
it bummed me out.
We were driving by Chuck E. Cheese. Matt and Jonah and I were driving by Chuck E. Cheese in Colorado. And I was like, let's go to Chuck E. Cheese, and they were like,
can't.
You can't.
Need a kid.
You can need a kid.
I've borrowed kids for that.
That's,
I'm not kidding.
That's weird. That's
it's
even
not weird.
Sounding.
It's not weird. It's like,
no, it's not weird.
Hey,
borrowing
I'll
kids.
Hang out. Listen, you want to go do something? Fine. I want to play skee ball. Let me have your kid.
Can I borrow, oh my gosh, can I borrow my a couple
son.
Kids?
My son, they just talk about Dave and Buster. We talk. It took them to Dave and Buster's, and they're like, it's like Disney World for them. Like,
it
can
is.
Can we go to Dave and Buster's?
Oh, are you talking about the one like in Times Square?
Yeah. And they loved it.
Have you ever been to a Dave and Buster's?
Of course.
It's a grown-up Chuck E. Cheese.
It's
it
fucking
is.
Great.
It's just, I mean, how else are you going to get the flu, right?
That's why I go and I lick the controllers and the joysticks. I'm just trying to get Dave and Buster's and Sega Gameworks are fun. And like it's just all those grown. It's funny to see the people who grew up, like with our generation, who grew up in during the video game explosion, then get older and be like, we need to have a bar with video games in it.
Yeah, definitely.
Because people are... I wonder if I'm still going to be playing Xbox when I'm like 75. I wonder if all the retirement homes are going to have like Xboxes in them.
Oh, yeah, that's weird to
right?
think about.
Of course they will.
It's going to be everywhere. I mean, first of all, the way we're going, there's going to be a casino on every block. I mean, don't you feel like when you go to a city, they're like, down there by the casino. And you're like, you don't even serve liquor in this county. And they're like, yeah, we got a casino. It's on a boat, though. So it has to be on this boat thing.
This technically, yeah.
It's just,
this guy.
We're succumbing to like. It's like, yeah, and over there's the prostitution thing next to that church.
But there's no, how can it be on a boat? There's no river here. I know. Well, we have a guy that goes down and scoops up river water, and as long as he can keep this one plot in front of it moist, then we can technically call it riverboat gambling.
Every city has that. I was just in Chicago yesterday. It's like, I was driving to my hotel, and they're like, here's the access to the casino. And I'm like, I didn't even know there was a casino there.
Have you been to Tunica, Mississippi?
No.
Tunica is right across the border from Memphis, and it used to be like the poorest county in Mississippi, and they legalized gambling there, and I think they did that weird riverboat thing where they diverted like an inch of water from the Mississippi River in through the, it's like driving to Vegas, but instead of desert, you're driving through cotton fields. And so you drive through cotton fields, and then all of a sudden you have these massive fucking casinos
that are, quote, I think technically riverboat gambling, but there's not really a river there. So
it's like the Seven Seas Lagoon at Disneyland.
I guess kind of.
Everything follows a track.
Yeah. Anyway, but the gambling and totally now Tunica's the richest county in Mississippi.
They did it.
It's great. Yeah. By the way, I love performing at casinos.
Do you really?
I love it.
I don't think they would like my nerdy snark.
You could go to like a Foxwoods, play the theater at Foxwoods.
Foxwoods, pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm going to be at Foxwoods.
When are you going to be there?
I think June 2nd.
June 2nd, Jim Gaffigan,
June 2nd, and then I'll
casino.
Be in Borgata, June something else.
Do you hit up Mohegan Sun?
You can only do Foxwoods.
Or Mohegan Sun, huh?
Or Mohegan Sun.
I'm a Foxwoods guy, me too.
I like Foxwoods. That's how we work, too. You're not doing any other podcasts, right? Can you imagine if we were...
Well, that'll probably come.
The booking wars?
That will probably come.
That might at some point. Someone might do that. But I think it hurts everyone if everyone gets super like, oh, you can't be on that one. You can't be on this one.
It's interesting how... all the podcasts, all the comedian podcasts, or maybe I'm just ignorant, but all of them are essentially in L.A.
Yeah.
A lot of them are, yeah.
Yeah. If you could drop a bomb and take out all podcasts.
Yes.
You can, it's like in a two-mile radius.
Yeah, thanks for giving Al-Qaeda ideas.
That's their first priority. We need to destroy podcasting.
But there's not many. I mean, there's... you know, there's a couple, you know.
Bill Burr, Rogan is here. You know,
Does Bill live here?
He does,
Yeah,
I think he does. Okay.
Yeah, Bill does live here.
It's another one.
And, you would take out most podcasts.
It's interesting. And you know what that is? That's because, you know, in New York, you never listen to the radio. You never, because you're on the subway.
Right.
Or in a cab.
Yeah.
Whereas in L.A., see, I'm also a sociologist. Or
wow, more charts.
An anthropologist.
It must be expensive to travel with all these charts.
It is expensive to travel with all these
the
charts.
Oversized.
I'm going to get one of those iPads.
Do you not have an iPad?
I've got an iPad.
Okay, good.
And when I first got it, I was like, this is great. Now I don't have to travel with my computer, laptop. Yeah. I'll just use this iPad. And then I was just like, all right, here, I'll just have my kid play with the iPad and I'll travel with my computer.
I travel with an Air and an iPad.
Yeah, it seems so counterintuitive.
It's not counterintuitive. It makes sense.
I don't even take my iPad with me.
The Air is for work and the iPad is for games and media and watching stuff.
My iPad sits. I lost it for 2 weeks and then I found it under my bed.
Really?
And then I was like, oh, guess I don't need this. Can't wait for the new iPad, though.
I was so excited. I had a meeting with a guy, just a guy.
Sure.
No, he was like a movie producer guy, and he did everything on his iPad. And I was like, I'm going to do that. I need a keyboard. And then I bought, you know, there's the thing where there's a keyboard that you can add. Still in the box.
Still in the box.
But it's also, you know, I write on Word, you know, and I'm sure I could do that, but... I don't know.
But it just, you know, you get into patterns. And if you're used to writing on Word and with a certain interface, then it's hard.
Final Draft is finally coming to the iPad.
Oh, it is. Good.
How fucking long did that take them?
That's ridiculous.
That did take a long time.
Like, seriously.
Maybe they were just seeing if it would catch on.
Really?
Well, that software probably took a while to develop.
No, probably not.
I don't care.
It could have been somebody that came in and stole their thunder. You should have used Word Snazzy.
Word Snazzy.
Word Snazzy, it's free. All you have to do is watch a commercial and then you can...
Word Snazzy would probably be that thing where it makes... It just puts like an animated GIF sparkle on every fourth sentence. Just, like you're just bedazzle your docs.
Would you like to know a restaurant nearby? No, thank you. I'd like to finish writing this sentence.
Okay.
So you're releasing your next special digitally.
I am, because I'm tech savvy. I literally call Chris in the middle. You know, I'll be like, "Hey, Chris, now email. If I wanted to do multiple emails to people," and he's like, "Jim, you have to read a book once."
No, I just start giving wrong information. We don't have the technology to do that yet.
We can't do
you
that.
You have to. But you've always been digitally savvy, though. Like you,
yes and no.
You were one of the guys that had that hopped on the "I should have an email distribution list" early on.
Yes.
Very early on.
Well, I don't know if very early on, I think I saw other people doing it, and I kind of hopped on there. It's kind of like MySpace and even Twitter. I was kind of, I mean, I had an account, but I didn't use it. I didn't really dive in right away. So, I mean, I feel like I'm always a little bit behind the curve, you know, MySpace is still big, right?
No. Huge, huge. Yeah.
But no, so some of the technology, and some of it is I don't think that I don't have the technology, even half the technology that you guys have.
I don't know what I mean? We don't use all of it.
Yeah, no.
We have it, but we don't necessarily use it.
Like Google Plus. I'm on Google Plus, and I'm like,
I'll put you in my circle.
I think I friended you.
You on Instagram?
I don't know what that is. Oh, that's like Fancy Photos?
Fancy Photos.
That's Fancy
That's a better
photos.
Name.
I'm on Hoosay.
No, it's Photo Snazzy.
Photo Snazzy.
Everything's just snazzy.
Would you like a restaurant in the area? No. But, so I'm always a little bit behind the curve. But, yes, I mean, I think it's... the email list thing was really important because it is, as you know, it's very frustrating. It's like you do a show in Atlanta, and then the next day you get a comment or a Twitter.
When are you coming to Atlanta?
When are you coming to Atlanta? And you're like,
I didn't shut up about Atlanta for a week. If you look at my tweet stream, you see like 10 pictures of me. Like, here I am eating a taco
here
in Atlanta.
Here I am in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Here's the link to buy tickets to Atlanta. When are you coming?
Why don't you
But so work? So some of it is I'm doing this download, but there's some... Some of the decision was more gut to do it, you know. I mean, I was thinking of doing it before Louis. I invented it. No. Even before Coldplay,
or
I did it.
Radiohead, Radiohead.
Yeah. I did it, and they wanted to do it. I'm not, yeah, Coldplay, Radiohead. John Elton. Before John Elton.
I think Cold.
I could just name a band, right?
Any band, yeah. Before Captain Beefheart was doing all that. Coldplay would be complimented by that, and I think Radiohead would be insulted by that.
Oh, yeah. No, that's about right. Well, I know that, too.
Yeah.
Because I've read, like, two articles on it. And it was also Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, Trent Reznor. Yeah.
Right? And so... But my whole journey into the download with no DRSM or whatever...
DRM.
Is... it started when I did this show, Night of Too Many Stars, which is a benefit for autism. Mm-hmm. And it was going to air twice, and I had this chunk of material, my set. And to set this up, it's like Sarah was on the show. You know, Steve Carell simulated, he acted out having an orgasm visually, mm-hmm. not physically. And then, so there was some big filth
right.
on the show, right? And, you know, Sarah, when she sings from her crotch, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so then I did my food chunk. Which was and so then Smigel, who kind of spearheaded the thing, was calling me and he was like, "You're not going to believe this, but we have to kind of edit out some of these jokes." And I'm like, "But I'm the clean one."
Oh no!
I'm the clean one on the show, and you have to edit me. You know,
what did they edit out?
They I was talking about an advertiser.
Oh, that's it! Oh, that's so fucking.
So the great irony is right. You know, they can beep out. You know, like a fuck or a shit.
Right.
And, you know, like culturally we've become accepting of like a blowjob reference. But if you go after the people that pay the bills.
So the other day I fucked my grandmother's pussy at Target. We're going to have to edit out Target. What?
Right. Yeah. So that kind of, you know, that was like 2 years ago. And I was like, well, and it was very apparent that, you know, the destination for this special was most likely Comedy Central. And this new chunk that I had that I did would be part of a special. And, you know, it's very ironic also to have Smigel, who has triumphed the insult comic dog, telling me,
right.
Mr. Clean Food Guy, that I have to, you
did
know.
He tell you as triumph? Because that would have
no,
been awesome.
No, he was... We
have to cut the bit.
We were laughing about it, right? Because he was like, you're not going to believe this. Standards and practices or whatever. The legal was... So that kind of made me kind of... look outside of what the options were, which was HBO, Showtime, and Comedy Central. And so I kind of was thinking about a lot of ideas. I was not thinking about doing the download necessarily when Louis did it. But Louis did it, I think, you know, and I think we learned from Louis that if you keep it really easy and really cheap and you're just very honest, I think that people will buy it. I mean, it's... In the end, it's kind of like, what would you do, right? You know, it's like, hopefully your comedy is like what you would like, right? And so I think the download thing is, I was like, you know, when I bought Louis, I was like, you know, I would do this. It's like half as much as it would be on iTunes or Amazon.
Well, not only that, but I think ultimately, you know, when you've built up
to a point where I think you have to be big enough to make it make sense. Like, I mean, obviously anyone can put a special on, but if you're talking about like, well, we want to, you know, it's specials are very expensive to shoot. Yeah. You're like $100,000-$150,000 to shoot a special.
Yeah. Or more.
So yeah. To, you know, you're going to need to recoup that money that yeah. you're spending. You have to be a big enough name for people to just want to go, oh, I'm already on the Jim Gaffigan bandwagon. Of course, I don't care where I see this thing. This is fine. I'll download it. Great.
Right.
So I think it's helpful that you guys are pretty well established in that.
Yeah, no, beyond a doubt. But there's also, that's the risk is also going back to what we started this conversation mm-hmm. is that Louis is the comic of today. Louis is on the most critically acclaimed television show of today, and I haven't really been on TV for 3 years. And so there is some concern. Like, believe me, my, you know, there were agents, you know, we probably have similar agents and managers that mm-hmm. were like, yeah, you know, this could whiff hard, really, you know, because Louis is also has a big international following. So there is something, you know, like I remember my agent kind of saying, he goes, Jim, people that like your comedy, they like the feel to hold a DVD in their hand.
So they basically, he was just saying that your demographic isn't tech savvy.
Right. And so, which I don't think is true, right? Because, I mean, iTunes and Amazon, it's like that's everyone. That's where we get our diapers.
But you're one
from
of the,
iTunes.
You know, you're one of the comics that and not everyone can do this, but you are one of the comics that can play both kinds of rooms very successfully. Like you can do mainstream rooms, but you can also do alternative rooms.
Right.
And it doesn't feel like, oh, this mainstream comic's trying to come in and do his road jokes
right,
at
right,
the fucking
right.
alternative show, which I've seen go very wrong. And
yeah.
even myself, When I would do long chunks of on the road and then come back and do like UCB, I like the mechanisms, like my delivery systems were all like road.
Right. No,
and
that's
I had
the truth
to, like,
serum.
I had to strip it back down and be like, okay, no, you're just talking to these people.
Right,
you're not
right.
in, you're not in road mode.
Yeah, those rooms are really important. But I also think that there is something at least, and this is like a window now, but I think there's also something about the internet, where you can't be motivated by greed, right? For people, you know, there's going to be people that are going to steal it, and this is my gut, right? My gut is if you're and Louis, you know, gave away tons of money, but if people on the internet think that you're trying to make a shitload of money, they're going to be turned off, and then
of
they're
course.
Just going to steal it. But if you're just like, look, I don't, you know, I want to make back my costs. I want to make some money, but I'm not trying to, you know, buy a $10 million house or anything.
Right.
So I think there's, and that's one of my guesses. It's like, if you're not being greedy, then people will be responsive to that. And I also think that it's the absence of like any corporate fingerprint. You know,
sure.
Because there were numerous kind of ideas that we had, and one of them was that I would partner with, you know, said company, you know, and so we would split the royalties. They would advertise it, and I would split, you know, so if it was $5, they would get $2.50, and I would get $2.50. And my gut was that kind of defeats the point, because then there's still that corporate kind of interference. Yeah. And I think that, like, when I bought Louis, I was like, all right, it's $5, Louis. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a very simple, you know, you're not dealing with, it's not a consumer exchange.
Right.
It's kind of, yeah, I like Louis. Here
yeah.
you go. You know, you're not, you know, it's like, what is that, a beer?
Well, but it's also, you know, exciting to directly be able to support the thing that you like, the guy that you like. I think that's what you're saying. Whereas
yeah.
it, literally, it's, you don't feel like it has, it's going through, well, I'm giving it to, you know, this company, and then Louis will get paid. It's like, no, you're just giving it directly to that guy.
Right. And I think we also know, and maybe we didn't know this in, but we, you know, and maybe it's a little but like those CD deals that
so bad.
It is just unbelievable. And then, you know, the CD deal was, it's so bad. And then we have to buy them.
Right.
From, you know, it's not like they give us like, here's 200, you know.
Right.
We had to buy them from them.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if most people listening understand that. Was as part of the CD, like the comedy CD deals, you do buy your own CDs at cost, which you then can sell on the road.
Right.
But you have to, you still have to buy those.
Right. And so
you have to buy your own comedy.
You have to buy your own comedy. Right. And then.
Oh, wouldn't it be so great if we were like, boy, in hip hop, it's okay to say, like, I'm going to buy a $10 million house. I'm going to take your money and buy a $10 million house. And people are like, here, take it. That's great.
Right, right.
You can't do that in comedy.
You can't do it in comedy. No. I don't think you can do it in comedy. And I think there's also, it doesn't fit the spirit of a comedian.
No.
It's like nobody goes into comedy like, I'm going to become rich.
Right.
It's an absurd pursuit. I mean, now it actually is. I feel like people can go into comedy and eventually make money. I don't know. But when I started off, I was kind of resigned to the fact that I was going to be the crazy uncle that lived in New York that did stand-up.
Oh, we're going to see your Uncle Jim. Just tell him he's funny.
Yeah, he's a comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Don't let this happen to your dreams.
There was a good decade of me being, Jimmy, who does
really?
Stand-up.
Really? 10 years?
Yeah, I would say. Well, maybe 8 or 9.
Still a lot.
Still a lot of years. A lot of years. I did, you know, I wasn't, you know, there was some very awkward years at Christmas. So how's that comedy? So you don't get paid when you do those shows?
Well, what else are you going to do to support the family?
Yes. So what if you ever met a woman? What would that
Tell us what would that be like.
But you have 4 kids now.
I know. I have 4 kids.
And did you say you were going...
And I don't even really like people. That's the thing that's really weird.
You're making tons of them.
Yeah, and I'm creating them.
Well, unprotected sex is awesome.
Yep.
Yes.
And B, it's kind of nice that, because I have so many friends, and then myself included, who are like, I don't know about this kid thing, you know? And so it is kind of nice. So, like, I think you're having kids for... Definitely for all of the Nerdist podcasts.
A lot of comedians.
Yeah. you're picking up the slack.
It is. It's weird when you have so many because people, you know, they definitely treat you a little bit like, oh, you have a lot of kids like Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney. You know, it's an absurd pursuit. It's absolute chaos. I mean, my wife comes from 1 of 9 kids and I'm the youngest of 6, but it's definitely a lot of... I mean, she's the one having them.
Yeah.
You know? It's her fault.
So, wait, you're not having any kids?
I'm not having any. I'm eating. But I do love it. You know, there's also a balance of, you know, joking around about it and also, because you don't want to be the cliche of, yeah, these kids are a pain in the ass. I mean, I really do love being a father.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I'm somebody who could sleep for 10 hours and then get up and then take a nap. And and now it's – but I don't know. I mean, I don't want that to just be the focus of my comedy. But I do want to be clear that I enjoy it. You know, it's a very important thing.
Did you say you were doing a bus tour with the family?
Yeah, we're going on a bus across – we're getting picked up because some of it is like when you have so many kids – traveling with them, it's like 4 plane tickets.
Right.
So, and some of this was the Todd Glass pitch to us. He was like, you should get on a bus.
You know, it's hard because when you're flying, you want to fly first class because it's cushier. But then if you have 6 people that are traveling, then number one,
that's all of first
you're
class.
All of first class is the Gaffigans. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, $20,000, $30,000.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I will never go to Australia. I mean, I'm resigned to the fact.
Because it's so expensive.
Because it would be, I would want to bring my family, and it's like, you don't go to Australia for like a weekend.
Right.
It's like, I really want to go there, but there's no way I'm not going to, and you know, it's like, I'm not Arj Barker. I'm not going to be able to sell tickets there. So it's like, I'll never go there. So anyway, so the bus will pick us up in New York and drive, and we'll do shows. And we'll see Mount Rushmore. It's my daughter's spring break. It's like that's what. It's weird because I mean your dad was a bowler. I don't know what your, you know. But it's like it's gonna be weird. You know, it's like my kids, their parent, their father is a comedian, and their mom writes comedy with their dad. It's weird.
It's almost like a kind of bizarre Partridge Family.
Right.
Where the mom didn't lose the husband.
Right.
And but they're together, and but they're doing comedy instead. Or you're just... No, actually, that's a bad comparison, because you'd have to be dead. Your wife would have to be doing comedy on the road with all of your kids. And then
I could be Reuben.
You could be Reuben. That's where it is. You could be Reuben. And then you guys...
He might have more hair than me.
Reuben Kincaid.
Oh, he had a good head of hair, that guy. God, I miss hair.
Do you think the kids are into the idea of, you know, being on a bus? Are they excited about it, or
yeah,
do they
no,
not?
They love it. They love it. I mean, they, you know, the kids that young, they're excited to be, you know, we went, when I did the special in D.C., we all went down and they took Amtrak, so they loved it, you know, but I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, we're going to Erie and we're going to Grand Rapids. So we're not, it's not as if we're, and here's the Golden Gate Bridge. It's, here's the, you know, I'm going to Williamsport. Here's the World Series Little League, you know.
You're going to be like, three days in, you're going to be like, just drop, take us to the airport.
Just take us to the airport.
Just take us to the fucking airport.
But it'll be good, I think.
What is this special? I know, just because I know your comedy, each special is always kind of about something. So what would you say is the theme? What's the name of the special?
Mr. Universe.
Mr. Universe.
Yes. It's myself effacing. No, but it's... Well, there's different chunks. I mean, I think this one's very much about denial.
Okay.
And now it turns into an NPR conversation.
Jim, would you tell us what went
into the... You mentioned denial so often in this special.
Is this a denial
reason?
Right now? Is this meta-denial?
No, I think there's some denial. So there's,
you should do one of your jokes, just NPR style.
You know, it's interesting when you have four kids, if you want to know what that's like, just imagine you're drowning and then someone hands you a baby.
Over the jazzy.
We'll be right back. By the way, NPR, I'd do anything for you. So, yeah, no, it's weird because, you know, there is a beginning, middle, and end, but it's not as if, and then my final thesis is
right.
That it's denial that we
exist.
No,
but I didn't, but, I, you know, like, I just got to, I'm in the process of going through and editing my first special, and, you know, there are a lot of jokes that I really like, but I'm going to take them out because they just don't really relate. They're just jokes that worked on the road, but they don't necessarily relate to, you know, the large chunk of material that kind of thematically makes up what the special's about.
Yeah, well, I feel like there's self-contained chunks, right? And some of it is there's information in there that kind of informs the next chunk, and so hopefully the chunks become funnier, and then they're all tied together with callbacks and point of view, and so I don't know. I mean, it's strange because I, you know, the editing of a special is it's pretty hard because there's the DVD version, right?
Yeah.
And your instinct is to like, let's get everything in there. I mean, we got everything, but you know, there's no sense in just putting jokes in there to put them in,
right?
But and the problem is that once you've, you know, do your final cut, you know, immediately when you shot your special, immediately the next 2 days you thought of tags, right, for jokes.
Well, not yeah, I thought of
that
tags.
That changed even the point of view of the material.
I right? remembered like a joke or two that I just forgot to do.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, fuck, and just trying to be okay with, well, I guess I could put it in the next one if it still makes if it's still relevant to me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, the special thing, I like it because it's also a snapshot. It's kind of, you know, you're graduating from college or you're getting, you know, a rite of passage. It's like, all right, here, now I'm a man. I've done this. Or I don't know. There's something cleansing about it. Once you get it out there, then, you know, there's that absolute fear of I got to get more material. I mean, this time I have like 20 minutes that I didn't put in this special because I knew that there was more to the material, but
so easy to become a joke hoarder where he's like, these jokes, I need them.
Like, well, yeah,
no, just write new ones.
Yeah, no, there's some people that do specials and then they wait a year till they have an hour and then they release it.
Mm. Oh, gotcha.
It's an interesting idea.
But yeah, that is an interesting idea. Well, I know that
I don't know when my special's coming out. I think it's in the summer, but I know that when I perform after the special comes out, it's got to be, you know, mostly, almost entirely new stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, for, you know, here we are, Nerdist. For the comedy nerds are going to know this stuff inside out, right?
And yeah.
That's where, I mean, I think it's weird when, you know, I had this, it wasn't in this special, but I talked about something where I referenced Bacon, and when I would do the material that referenced Bacon in a theater, people would be like, great, he's going to do the Bacon material. So everything has a context for the comedy nerds that love your stuff. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
It does make sense, yeah. But I was just thinking about what it must be like when you do, you know, your fourth appearance or your third special, and that it becomes more of a just an upper level kind of a game where you're not just, oh, these are a bunch of things that I've always thought were funny and here they are when you do your first special, and just thinking about you having to navigate. Like, well, this is too much like the old special, but if I do this and people are going to connect it to this, but now they kind of expect this, so now it has to be this. Like, your previous specials have almost set up like an obstacle course or like a steeplechase for you, which even narrows down the scope of what you can write about even further.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've exhausted every food item. I mean, it's there's going to be a natural progression, and, you know, this special is far more, there's a stronger point of view on that one chunk that got edited, where, you know, I was talking about a major advertiser. I mean, I was very critical of them, but I was also it's a social criticism of our, you know, I might as well say it, but it's McDonald's, and it's like I was kind of doing the contrarian. To the contrarian. So we know that McDonald's is horrible for us, but I was kind of taking the point of view of it's a burger place. You know, it's not some health food shop. You know, it's like McDonald's is like, heck, even our spokesman's a pedophile. And so is a pedophile clown from the 70s.
Now,
right?
I think even the McDonald's executives would have to admit that that was true.
Well, no, that's but there's like a bunch of jokes like that in that chunk. And to Comedy Central, I mean, they have to protect their advertiser. You know, it's just cover your ass, right? The mentality of cover your ass. Even though we are comedians.
The truth of the matter is most advertisers do not have a sense of humor about their product at all.
Until they realize that all publicity is good publicity.
Hot Pockets was smart because as much as you shit on Hot Pockets, there was still a guy at every show dressed like a fucking Hot Pocket handing out Hot Pockets.
Yes.
They still saw the value in the fact that they were being talked about.
Totally. And I think that my McDonald's chunk is in the end, a love letter to McDonald's. It's just, you know, like this whole thing of people saying that we don't go to McDonald's, or you might laugh at a friend like, oh, he goes to McDonald's, or, oh, I'm so embarrassed I have a McDonald's cup in my car. It's like everyone goes there.
Yeah, it's not like
I mean, we aspire to never go there. I'm not saying that you might not go there.
I've not eaten at McDonald's in, truthfully, like 6 years.
But this is L.A., though, where, you know, there's like a health. You know, you can not eat meat in L.A. and go out to dinner for every single meal. But, like, if you're in Oklahoma City...
I am on the road a lot, but I just can't bring myself... I just can't...
You, don't, you also I, don't have four kids.
I do not have four
and
kids.
And you're not a glutton.
I bought...
I am a digital...
What about you? Now, do you eat at McDonald's?
I don't regularly, but Super Bowl Sunday, I bought 200 McNuggets for a Super Bowl party.
And that cost him $5.
No. It was like 40 bucks.
Right.
200...
That's nothing.
40 for 200 of something...
Right.
For 200 of anything is an excellent deal.
And the amazing thing is afterwards he had 190 nuggets.
We ended up eating 80 of them.
80?
Yeah, and there was like 14 people at the party.
But I'm also talking generally. It's like there's been times in my life where I'm very, you know, I remember I went like 6 years where I didn't have a Dorito. And then when I finally had one, I was like, this is disgusting. Now I'm so out of shape, I'm like, the different flavors of Doritos.
Well, now
Taco Bell's doing that.
Now Taco Bell is wrapping their tacos in Dorito.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant. right?
I don't. Maybe.
How could you not do that?
But you're not going to go there. It's not for you.
Well,
I
can't. I mean, I'm hard on myself because I'm like, oh, I don't eat well. But it, comparatively, I eat a lot better than most people.
Right. Yeah, you do.
And what?
Yeah, you do. Eat a lot better than me when I'm dieting.
Come on. He could be fasting and you're eating better than him.
You know what I think? I just you know, I used to be chunky, and I'm not obsessive about food, but I definitely, I never kind of, you know, that point of my life always represents when I just didn't, when I fucking hated myself.
I had a doctor once say to me, "You'll never be a small guy, whatever you do." And I was like, all right.
Well, why?
Well, you know, but that, I think,
let me just kick open the ball.
I think that's wrong. I think that's actually wrong. I mean, you know, it's like Jonah Hill, you know, it's like he may be really rich and really successful, but anyone can do what he did.
Right.
Well, he's putting
it back on. You know, but, you know, and you were like, you know, you're like, oh, that was during a period where I hated myself. I mean, you know, and I think that that's a very valid point, but I've been thin. And I'm pudgy, and I plan on getting very fat. No, but my point is that some of it is the chain is off the bike, you know, for me right now.
Yeah,
and that's,
I mean,
not to say that I won't become healthy.
But I'm not trying to suggest that. I mean, I didn't hate myself because I was fatter. I hated myself, and as a result, I was doing a lot of things that were unhealthy to punish myself. And so that's what I mean. Like, I don't. You know, whether you're thin or fat, it doesn't, you know, like, as long as you're getting to it in a good, healthy way.
When we did the first podcast with Jim, I was 100 pounds heavier than I am now.
Yeah, I saw some pictures from like, I was going through iPhoto and just looking at some old pictures. I'm like, Matt has really dropped a fucking lot of weight.
That's pretty cool.
But you know what? Whatever. I'll never be a small guy.
But, you know, it's also relative, right? I mean, I might, you know, eat McDonald's or Wendy's. I'm not proud of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm also saying, my point is that they sell 6 billion hamburgers a day. So it's not as if no one's going there.
Right.
It's not just Matt and I.
And it's not like your comment. They're going to be like, we dropped to 5.9 billion.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so the thing is also, it's relative. You know, it's like, I also like something warm. It's like, what are you eating in an airport? Because it's like, for me, I'm like, all right, I'm not going to have the Annie's, you know, deep fried pretzel, whatever that.
But it's really good with the butter.
Oh, yeah. But to me, it's like, well, that's just dough.
Right.
At least right. I'll have some, you know, McDonald's, you know, you know how much it's going to cost, and you know how much it's going to suck. It's not going to suck that bad. You know, you're going to feel like crap afterwards, but you know, sometimes it's like, what are you eating? A salad at an airport? You're going to Wolfgang Puck? I mean, what are you doing?
No, what I mean, I just eat, you know, I just eat sandwiches, but I don't eat a lot. Like, I never eat until I'm full, which isn't really anything I try to do. It's just like, I'll have half a sandwich and I'll go, yeah, I'm good. Like, I don't.
See, that means you're a bad person.
I think maybe it does. I'm a bad person.
See, we have. Yeah. No.
I'm murdering a baby when I'm doing it with my other hand. Does that make me a bad person? Jonah, what do you think? Oh, Jonah.
He's not
Jonah,
here.
Jonah's not here.
My brain, it supposedly takes 20 minutes for your stomach to tell your brain you're full,
yep.
right?
Yep.
I don't listen to that rule.
Which is so funny, because I could just poke your arm and you'd be like, ow.
I feel that.
You're like, come on, body. Why can't you tell me I'm full faster?
When I was healthy, I would force myself to drink like a ton of water, and then I would wait like 10 minutes, and then I would eat. Then would be kind of full.
Yeah. Yep.
So you trick your body into it.
There you go.
I'm a big fan of tricking my body into doing things.
That was a trick that I remember Calista Flockhart was in this made for TV Lifetime movie about bulimia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what her model friend told her. Drink a bunch of water before you eat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then what happened?
Worked out. She's still thin.
Oh. I don't know if that really is what happened.
No,
I don't think that's
what I took away from it.
Ended. So this last special, did you feel good going into it, or do you still beat yourself up and stuff? Does that ever go away?
Yeah. No, I definitely do. And there's also, it's like when you're taping a special, the crowds were very nice, but it's never the idea. How was your audience when you were taping? Was it perfect, or?
They were pretty amazing.
They were pretty cool.
Yeah. They were really nice. I mean, it's one of those weird things where, you know, I was shooting the special, and I'm like, this is so much fucking fun. I hope they're able to capture it on camera, because comedy is very hard to shoot.
It's very hard
to capture, because it's such an in real life experience that you share with that group of people, and it's very hard to capture that in a way
that conveys it to people who are watching
at
home.
That's why Sinbad did it on a beach in the wind.
Well, did he? But I think that's some comedy doesn't translate well to television or a screen at all.
Right.
But I think for me, I think there's also there's with jokes, you come up with a joke, you kind of work on it, and then it'll have a peak, and then there's a natural fatigue with it, right? And it'll go up and down. You'll be like, why isn't it working? We've all had a joke where it kills, and then suddenly it's just like, it's not working anymore.
Yeah, but I think your stuff translates well to being shot because the jokes stand. The jokes can stand alone.
They're very boring
for
and
themselves.
Simple. Yes.
No, they're not boring and simple. I mean, they're just like they just
lie there.
No,
they're like knock knock jokes.
What I mean is that I feel like there are some jokes I get away with. There are some jokes that in my head I go, I don't think that's as funny. I don't think it's as funny as I'm getting credit for with this audience. I think it's just because my energy is pushing it a certain way that is. I feel like I'm tricking people a little bit. As opposed to if I just told them, like, well, here's what the joke is, they'd be like, yeah, I don't know. What is that?
I think there's it's also fun to have a joke. You know, we want it to be undeniable, right? And to kind of do it on your heels because, you know, sometimes you're tired. I mean, I'm a low energy guy, so sometimes I'm literally like blah 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 blah. And so it's another truth serum. It's like if it's so funny, you can mumble through it.
Yeah.
Then it's really funny.
Yeah.
And then if you can kind of, you know, add a little dance to it. I mean, I'm not talking about an actual dance.
Would you start dancing? You should dance.
I'm definitely gonna dance.
Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna start at Punchlines just having two backup dancers come out and do a routine and then run back off.
I enjoy dancing. But like when I see like a dance montage in a television show, it makes me angry.
Like on L.A. Law.
L.A. Law.
What the fuck? Thank you for calling yourself out of it before I can
say
the
Law
words.
And Order.
No, yeah, Law and Order. They always have dance.
You know when you're watching L.A. Law?
I meant to say another example that has no dancing in it.
Oh, that Arnie. He sure
no, but
fucks
I,
all those
you know,
girls.
Like Drew, you know, it's like I like Drew, but the opening number, or even in, you know, it's just, to me, it's just like, you know, that should be an Annie. That should be in a musical. That shouldn't be in a comedy. I mean, it's unfair to say, probably, but that's just me going out on a limb, being anti-dance.
Jim Gaffigan hates dance.
Anti-dance. You know, because there's
Jim Gaffigan to dance. Fuck you.
I feel like there is something of anti-cell mentality that I was kind of... brought up in comedy, you know, with Attell and Louie and Todd Barry. It shouldn't be, there should be no dance. It should just be the material.
It's an interesting...
They should hate you, but they should like the joke.
That's a very pure... I mean, it's a much more bulletproof formula, I think, that I totally get that the comedy purist of like, you know, you should be behind a fucking sheet. And your jokes should still be working.
Right. There's something there. I don't know. Oh, but you know what I forgot to bring up? My special is $5 pitch. No, but one of the dollars, going back to like, because I believe that people, you know, you can't be greedy. So like $1 from every $5 is going to be donated to the Bob Woodruff Foundation. So it's... that helps veterans and their families. So it's like, look, I'm not doing this as some get rich quick scheme. You know, it's like, I think that there's something about, you know, it's not even like, here's another reason to buy it. It's just kind of like, look, my intentions are pure here. It's not.
$5 is a ridiculously reasonable amount of money to pay for a fucking hour of, or 75 minutes of comedy. That is an insane. You can't even buy a fucking audio album.
Plus, you can watch it on your TV because everything you connect to your TV now has the internet on it.
Yeah, and the irony is that I'm probably making more money, you know, like I have to pay for the production. I'm giving away a dollar, and people will buy it once, and for $5, so let's say I get $3.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's like, that's more than I would make on a sale of a DVD.
Absolutely.
And it's like 800 times more than I would make on a CD.
Right.
So it's like, because that's the whole thing of like, I mean, I would spend $5 for a comedy special of a comedian I didn't like just to see what it looked like.
Yeah. Well, it's
it could play in the background when I'm checking email.
Everyone knows this, but I'm going to say it anyway. But it's just the classic media distribution model said that these companies controlled all the distribution outlets and they controlled advertising. And that's why it made sense for you to put your thing with them and let them produce it and then take your nickel per DVD.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, they're going to get it out to, you know, 20 million people.
Right.
But that has eroded, and that's not necessarily the way it works anymore. So you are empowered to do this model.
It's interesting. It's like we're in the Wild West of with the Nerdist channel on YouTube. It's like the revolution has begun, right?
Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see if people are ready for it yet. We're definitely going to try.
They're ready.
Ready.
We're going to see. But if you, if people want to get the special, it comes out April 11th. Would they just go to jimgaffigan.com?
Yes.
jimgaffigan.com. @JimGaffigan on Twitter. Now, this is something I'm probably going to start doing on the show. Sometimes I get shit for being too nice to people on my show.
Okay.
Because I think they think that negativity is more real or something.
Why stick to your strong suit?
Yeah, exactly.
Succumb to criticism.
Well, I don't know what's happening here, but I love it. What's happening?
So fuck you for being here.
Okay. I thought it was going to be like, Jim, why are you so unfunny? No, I was... Martin Bashir, have you ever seen him? Interviews? You should YouTube him.
Okay.
Because some of those interviews, you're like, holy shit, come on, Martin. You invited this guy to be on your show.
Yep.
And he's like, is it true that you once were rude to women? Doesn't that reflect you being a misogynist? And you're like, the guy's like sitting there going, I'm promoting a book where I talk about Jesus.
A book where Jesus beats women?
Isn't Jesus a Jew?
And you're like, what? Happening? What are you doing? Anyway, it's always good to see you, and I wish you the best of luck on your bus tour.
Thank you.
Take videos.
Your bus tour.
It is
Sounds
doing a bus
weird
tour.
When you say it like that.
He's doing a family bus
it's
tour.
It's a comedy tour.
It's a comedy tour.
He's getting there via bus.
Yeah, so yeah, a bus tour.
I'm going to be a lot less sleep, but it'll be good.
Do you know the bus driver?
No, I talked to him on the phone.
Oh, you did?
He has six kids.
Oh, so he understands.
Hopefully.
What if he was like, no, I'm doing this to get away from six
yeah,
kids?
Yeah, no, he probably, you know, that's probably one of the
Hey, Jim, can I bring my kids?
Yeah.
10 kids.
It'll be very interesting.
We'll eat at a Cracker Barrel for me, and it's good to see you, and thanks again for coming, and I wish you the best of luck, Mr. Universe, April 11th, jimgaffigan.com, $5. $1 goes to charity. For Christ's sake, do this. Now. Jim's not trying to get rich.
Yeah, do it right now.
But if he accidentally got rich, that would be okay.
If I accidentally got rich, I'm
if
not...
If he accidentally fell into a pile of money, he's not...
I'm not going to be like, hey, wait a minute. I mean, I got four kids to hopefully put through college or a bunch of rehabs. I need the money.
Probably both. No. Probably both. Well, thank you again, and enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels...
There are murders in all of the books.
...that she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.